What is the difference between a married woman and a Pardhanishin woman? Pardhanishin woman observes complete seclusion. She does not deal with people other than her family members in accordance with the custom of her own community. As she remains completely secluded, a presumption in law exists that any contract entered into by her might have been subject to undue influence, and the contract may not have made with her free will and with full understanding of what the contract actually means. Bankers take due precautions while opening such accounts and may have some criteria to be fulfilled for opening such accounts. So one has to comply with the requirements which comes in the form of terms and conditions before opening an account, so that the banking relationship which is established helps the banker to establish the fact that the contract has been entered into not by any undue influence, but has been made with the free will of the account holder, and such account holder fully understands of what the contract actually means. Just as we have a requirement of taking thumb impression in the presence of a bank witness and an independent witness while opening an account, such requirements of taking a thumb impression in front of a banker as a witness, and if the bank insists, or if the bank's rules and regulations mentions that an independent witness may also be required while taking a thumb impression when the customer wants to withdraw. So whenever the customer, illiterate customer, wants to withdraw, you will have to give a thumb impression in the presence of a witness, which can be a banker or a banker and an independent witness, and only then the withdrawal can be allowed. And because of this thumb impression in presence of a witness, the chances of denial of the transaction is eliminated, and later the illiterate person will not be in a position to deny the transaction as it was done in front of a witness. And the procedure would be, before posting the transaction, before passing the transaction, the concerned official has to in fact explain the transaction and take concurrence of the customer explaining what he is doing, so that becomes an additional evidence that the transaction was explained in front of a witness and the execution has happened because of the concurrence of the illiterate person. What about the disabled persons, especially persons disabled with autism, cerebral palsy, mental retardation, and multiple disabilities? Banks may accept the guardianship certificates issued by the district court under the Mental Health Act or by the local committees set up under the National Trust for the Welfare of Persons with Autism, Cerebral Palsy, Mental Retardation and Multiple Disabilities Act 1999. Only this particular entities are allowed to issue such certificates, and because of which the banks may accept guardianship certificates issued by such authorities, especially the district court, which has been specifically mentioned under the Mental Health, or by the local committee set up under the National Trust for Welfare of Persons. Guardians of people suffering from the above only can open such account for the benefit of such disabled persons. Guidance must also be given to such guardians how to open such accounts. The guidance can be given to the parents, to the relatives, so that they don't face any difficulties for opening accounts for just disabled persons, so that whatever money that is required for the nurturing and growth of this disabled category can be saved and utilized based on the requirements. Lunatics, people of unsound mind. But who are the people of sound mind? A sound mind people are capable of understanding the contract and of forming a rational judgment as to its effect upon its interest. Unsound mind exactly is opposite. Usually of sound mind, but occasionally of unsound mind, cannot enter into a valid contract when he is of unsound mind, but can when he is of sound mind. If a banker has to discount a bill duly written, accepted or endorsed by a lunatic, he can realize the money due on the same from such person, except in the circumstances where it is proved that the banker was aware of the lunacy of the person concerned at the time of discounting. Which means, if the banker has done in good faith without knowledge of the lunacy, the banker may get a protection. But if he is aware about the lunacy at the time of discounting, then the banker may not get the protection. What are the banker's safeguards against lunatics? The banker should not open an account in the name of a person who is an unsound mind. The banker should suspend all operations on the account of the customer as soon as he receives the news of lunacy, till he gets the proof of his sanity or served with an order of court. He should continue to suspend all operations. When a person maintaining an account with a bank becomes a lunatic, only those contracts which were made when he was in the command of his senses are valid. All transactions done after the lunacy will automatically stand invalid. Drunkards, when the person is under the influence of alcohol, he is unable to understand the nature of transaction and hence he is unable to form a rational judgment. The law provides that any contract made by a person in a drunkard state is void. If a negotiable instrument is drawn or endorsed by a drunkard and is passed to a holder who takes it in good faith and without knowledge of his drunkenness, the holder's title will not be adversely affected, which again is similar to the previous slide. Like a banker who is not aware of the lunacy, similarly, if the holder is not aware about the drunkenness, the holder's title will not be adversely affected. Insolvent or a bankrupt, unable to discharge his debt in full, he can declare himself as an insolvent. He himself can approach the court for such declaration, or his creditor can do so. The banker should not open an account in the name of the insolvent, nor should any money be advanced to an undischarged insolvent. Balance in such account vests in the official receiver and to be disposed of in accordance with the law. This is very important requirement from the banker's point of view. First of all, he should not open an account in the name of insolvent, nor should any money be advanced, and preferably a new account should be opened to record all receipts and payments after the declaration of insolvency, so that the previous account does not carry any transactions that are made after declaration of insolvency. How the payment is made in case of an insolvency? In case of insolvency of one of the joint account holders, the mandate is given jointly, immediately ceases to operate. A banker should stop payment from the account to determine the liability of the insolvent person. This is the first thing a banker has to do the moment a notice of insolvency has been served upon him. The banker should stop payment from the account to determine the liability of the insolvent person, especially in case of a joint account. Payments may be made on instructions jointly signed by the solvent account holders and the official receiver of the insolvent account holder. Only when there is a joint consent by the solvent account holders and the official receiver of the insolvent account holders, payment may be made on such joint instructions. Otherwise, all the operations in the account needs to be stopped.
We have discussed about illiterate persons, wherein the requirement of thumb impression and a witness was required. In the similar fashion, this category of customers, which are called visually challenged, we don't say them blind for a simple reason. The vision clarity differs from person to person, and hence we call them as visually challenged. Unlike the illiterate person category, visually challenged can be offered more services as directed by the Reserve Bank of India. The Reserve Bank of India has directed the following orders issued by the Honorable Court of Chief Commissioner for Persons and Disabilities, that all banking facilities such as checkbook facility, including third party checks, ATM facility, net banking facility, locker facility, and even retail loans and credit cards can be offered to visually challenged persons. It should invariably be offered without any discrimination, for a simple reason: the blindness should not come in front of offering various banking products and services. RBI has even gone to the extent of ordering the banks by saying that they should provide assistance and ensure that at least 1/3 of new ATMs should be installed having the Braille keypads, and these Braille keypads will enable these visually challenged persons to operate the ATM without even assistance of anybody. Having seen the various facilities that can be offered to the visually challenged persons, now we are going to move on to a very, very important category of customer, that is the non-resident Indians. In the current scenario of the increasing current account deficit, this particular category is getting more and more importance, and most of the banks are designing various attractive products so that the foreign currency can come into our country in the form of deposits for non-resident Indians. But before we go further, we need to understand who is a non-resident. A non-resident is defined under the Foreign Exchange Management Act as a person who resides outside India or who is not a resident of India. And when a person resides outside India or who is not a resident of India, he is definitely gone for a purpose. So what is that purpose and what can be that purpose? A person who stays outside India or otherwise gone out of India for on taking up an employment outside. He has got a job in a foreign country and hence he has gone there for an employment. The other reason he can go abroad is for carrying on a business or a vocation. Another reason can be any other purpose in such circumstances as it would indicate his intention to stay outside India for an uncertain period. So that uncertain period is very important to decide whether a person is gone abroad for the purpose or he is just gone abroad for the reason of tourism. When a person goes abroad for the person of tourism, we may not call him as a non-resident. He has to go for a specific purpose of employment, business, occasion, or some vocation or some other reason wherein the intention of staying abroad for an uncertain period is indicated. We should also know who is a person of Indian origin. Those whose parents, grandparents or great-grandparents were citizens of undivided India and are now citizens of another country, which means they had origins in our country but now they are citizens of another country, but another country excepting Pakistan and Bangladesh. So any other country in which they reside and their parents, grandparents or great grandparents were citizens of undivided India, they can be called as persons of Indian origin. Overseas citizens of India. The Citizenship Amendment 2003 defines an overseas citizen of India as a person who is of Indian origin or was a citizen of India immediately before becoming citizen of a specified country and is registered, he has to register as an overseas citizen of India with the central government. Then only he will be called as an overseas citizen of India. Foreigners. Can the foreigners deal with Indian banks? Of course. Citizens of another country who are not of Indian descent will be called as foreigners. Foreigners residing and working in India may open bank accounts for their regular banking. They are not prohibited from opening a bank account in India. Others may open account for a shorter period of time, but prior to opening account, the passport and other documents should be carefully checked. The passport and other documents like the visa, it will definitely bring out the real purpose of their staying in our country, whether it's for employment or for any other purpose, and that needs to be properly checked before opening an account for the foreigners. Now we are moving slowly towards the non-individual entity, which means they are not the natural persons, they are the artificial or the legal entity. The first one among them is the trustees. According to the Indian Trust Act 1882, a trust is an obligation annexed to the ownership of property. What is that obligation and what is it arising out of? It is arising out of a confidence reposed in and accepted by the owner or declared and accepted by him for the benefit of another or of another and the owner. So the obligation is basically to take care of some interest of another owner and to carry out certain functions as defined in the trust deed. when we say the trustee, we need to understand the different terms relating with the trustees and the trust deed. The person who reposes the confidence for forming a trust is called the author of the trust. The person in whom the confidence is reposed is called the trustee. And the person for whose benefit the trust is formed is called the beneficiary. So we should be very clear as to who an author of a trust is, who a trustee of a trust is, and who a beneficiary of a trust is while opening an account in the name of trust or the trustees. Whenever we open an account for a trust or in the name of trustees, one important document has to be submitted before opening an account, and that document is called a trust deed. While opening an account in the names of persons in their capacities as trustees, the banker should take the following precautions. Number one, it has to examine the names, the powers vested, the functions and other terms and conditions defined in the trust deed, the quantity of the powers and the functions that are allowed to be performed for those persons who are named in the trust deed is very much essential so that the banker can accede only to those powers and functions only, neither more than that, neither less than that. The second important thing needs to be checked is the operation of account. Okay, the account may be in the name of many trustees, but within those trustees, only few of them may be allowed to operate the account. So the banker has to be very clear as to who are allowed to operate the account. The next important aspect to be checked is the authority vested in case of death of any of the trustee. The operation of the account should continue in case of exigency. So clear directions from the trust deed has to be obtained in such scenario what is supposed to be done. The next important aspect to be checked is in case of an insolvency of trustee, how will it affect the operation of the account? Insolvency of trustee does not affect the trust property. But is there any other obligation on the part of the bank to be performed in case of such insolvency? That needs to be properly checked by the banker, and this all checks can happen after perusal of the trust deed. The banker should also take all possible precautions to safeguard the interest of the beneficiaries. Because whenever the confidence is reposed in the form of trust, the banker becomes immediately liable to ensure that all the terms and conditions mentioned in the trust deed are fully complied and adhered to, and entire thing is done for the benefit of the beneficiary. Hence, it becomes very essential that a banker should take all possible precautions to safeguard the interest of the beneficiaries. The trustees may borrow money from the banker and pledge or mortgage the trust property only if the trust deed specifically confers such powers on them. Otherwise, you cannot pledge or mortgage the trust property even for the sake of beneficiary. It has to be exclusively mentioned in the trust deed. Only then such pledge or mortgage can happen. If a trustee becomes a lunatic, unsound mind, what is to be done? The operations on the trust account has to be immediately suspended until a new trustee is appointed. These are some special cases which has to be adhered to and has to be checked whether such provisions are there in the trust deed or not. Funds in the trust account cannot be used for liquidating debt standing in the name of a trustee. If it is a trust account, the entire usage has to be done for the beneficiary. The funds cannot be diverted to the personal account of the trustee. A trustee personal account will have credits only of his personal income and not about the trust income. Hence, it is very essential to see that this particular aspect is carefully adhered to by the bankers. Now we move on to the next category, that is the executor and the administrators. We have to understand the real meaning of an executor as well as the real meaning of an administrator. This specifically happens when an appointment is done by specific authority or entity, and that classifies them into an executor or an administrator. These are appointed specifically to conduct the affairs of a person after his death. When a person known as a testator appoints another person for his purpose through a very important document, that is the will. So whoever writes a will is a testator, and he appoints another person for this purpose, that is to take care of his property after his death. And such person who is appointed by a testator in his will is called the executor. So if the will of the testator does not mention the name of the executor, what happens to the property of the deceased? In that case, the court appoints a person for the purpose, and such person who is appointed by the court to look after the property of the deceased will be called as an administrator. So this appointment of an administrator happens through the letter of administration issued by the court. So friends, we have to understand the real meaning as to who is an executor. An executor is specifically appointed by the testator of the will, whereas an administrator is appointed by the court through a letter of administration. Both executors and administrators realize the assets of the deceased to pay off his debt or to distribute it to the legal heirs. So that is a very important function given for the executors and administrators, and bankers may have to open an account in the name of executor or administrator for realizing the value of the assets for its disposal. So this particular type of account needs to be opened only after confirming the authority or the appointment issued in the letter of administration or the probated will. A will by itself cannot be used. A will always needs to be probated, and after that the execution of will happens through the letter of probate. Bankers has to note some very important aspects, like on the death of a customer, the banker must stop payment, but the executor and or the administrator should be permitted to operate the account after obtaining the probate. As I had said in the previous slide, probate has to be done for a will or the letter of administration from the court. So both the probate and the letter of administration is issued by the court. If two or more persons are appointed as executors or administrators, they shall have joint interest in the estate of the deceased, and this interest is not capable of division. So it will be jointly executed. Misappropriation by personal uses has to be strictly prevented, and that can happen through banker's permission to allow a particular transaction or not through the executor or the administrator. So banker has to be very careful in ascertaining the reasons when any checks are issued by the executor or the administrators. in case of death of one of the executor, what is to be done? That same thing applies in case of a death of a administrator also. So in that case, the check issued on such account should not be dishonored, even if he is one or two or more signatories, as the powers are vested on the surviving executors or the administrators. Banker can exercise his right of set off against the credit balance in the executor's personal account in respect of the debit balance in the account of the deceased. This is an inherent right of a banker. An executor or an administrator can raise loans for immediate wants of the estate against the security of the estate. His major concern is to see that the function which is given for the executorship or the administratorship should be efficiently and effectively done. Who is a customer's attorney? A customer may not be able to operate his account, but he may appoint some known person for his operation, and this authority may be a general authority for entire operations of his account or a specific authority for performing only certain operations in the account. So based on the authority defined in a document called a power of attorney, the operations in the account may be allowed by the banker, provided the essentials of the power of attorney, like the stamping, the notarizing, etc., is fulfilled. So a customer may appoint an attorney to deal with his bank account. The power of attorney is a general notice and an authority for this purpose. It's a sort of notice given by the customer to the banker, please do this, these are my instructions, in the form of notice. It is different from an ordinary mandate. An ordinary mandate can be in the form of a simple letter. It may be a simple standing instructions, but this is different from an ordinary mandate which authorizes a person to operate his bank account. The power of attorney, as I said earlier, can be general, in which the all matters concerning the business may be allowed, whereas it can be special or specific, wherein the power in regard to only certain matters can be allowed. For example, the attorney can do only a sale transaction or a purchase transaction and nothing else. So these are examples of special power of attorney. What precautions should bankers take in this case? A power of attorney has to be duly stamped and registered with the registrar of documents or attested by a notary public. The stamping may vary from state to state, and hence wherever the document is executed, the power of attorney has to pay the stamp duty at the applicable rate in the state in which it is executed. Not only it should be duly stamped, it has to be registered with the registrar of documents and attested by a notary public also. A power of attorney must be in force. What does that mean? Must be in force simply means the authority given by the customer may be for a specific period only, and after that the power of attorney becomes a stale document. Hence it has to be in force. All the terms of concerns at any time in future should be noted carefully, so it does not become a document for life. Some future instructions also needs to be noted very carefully. Special powers has to be recorded so that there is no confusion as to allowing the powers that are desired by the customer in his power of attorney. There should not be any confusion between the general instructions and the special instructions. Hence, it becomes very essential to record the special transaction as soon as the power of attorney is submitted. Persons presenting the power of attorney should be properly identified, and the address noted. No doubt the signature of the person who is allowed to operate the account in the power of attorney is attested by the customer or the power of attorney issuer, but it becomes important for the banker also to identify the person who is mentioned in the power of attorney so that the transaction happens only to that person and nobody else. Account opening form must be signed by the principal, that is the account holder, and the signature of the attorney has to be attested by the principal, without which a banker won't be able to know who the person is. Hence, it becomes very essential that the person who is authorized to operate the account, his signature needs to be attested by the principal, which is the account holder, and that attestation can come on the account opening form itself. If the power of attorney authorizes the attorney to open a bank account, the bank may open an account but must seek a confirmation from the principal before actual operations are allowed. A confirmation from the principal is necessary before allowing any operations on such account. A power of attorney should not contain any unforeseeable conditions. We are not supposed to take any unforeseeable conditions. How can we know any unforeseeable conditions? So such unforeseeable conditions cannot be mentioned in the power of attorney and should not be accepted. Under Section 201 of the Indian Contract Act, an agency gets terminated any time when the principal revokes such authority. Hence, this is very important and applicable even for the power of attorney, which can be revoked by the principal anytime he wishes to do so.